Nemoto presents Theater for Beginners. Samuel Beckett, Absurdism. Narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Christopher voice. Running time, approximately 6 minutes. A pair of tramps on a country road, waiting by a bare tree for a man who never comes. This is Samuel Beckett's contribution to theater, and it changed the course of drama. When Waiting for Godot premiered in 1953, audiences saw a play where nothing happens twice. Many were baffled or angry. But beneath its apparent nothingness, Beckett was digging toward the most profound questions of human existence. In the shattered aftermath of World War II, Beckett's theater of the absurd dared to show life stripped of comforting storylines. It was as if the stage itself had become a mirror to a world that had lost its familiar plot. Beckett, an Irishman who wrote mostly in French, had a dark, wry view of life's sordid side. But he insisted that wasn't the point. The tramps in Godot or the people buried in trash bins in Endgame weren't there to shock us with ugliness. He chose such extreme, stripped-down situations to concentrate on the essential aspects of human experience. What are those essentials? Being thrown into the world without explanation, not knowing why we are here, the grinding wait for meaning that might never arrive. Beckett's characters grapple with these existential questions in the most reduced circumstances. A nearly empty stage, minimal props, repetitive dialogue that often breaks into gibberish or silence. By discarding the superfluous, Beckett made audiences confront existence itself. Despite the bleak ideas, Beckett's plays are often funny. He had a clown's soul inside a philosopher's mind. Godot is full of vaudeville-like routines, hats swapped, boots examined, witty wordplay. This mix of comedy and despair only made the impact stronger. One moment you're laughing at the ridiculous antics of Vladimir and Estragon. The next, you catch the chill of their predicament. Nothing to be done, one says at the start, encapsulating the hopelessness that creeps in. Beckett once worked for a French resistance cell during World War II and later saw friends persecuted. He was intimately familiar with cruelty and absurdity in life. Perhaps that's why his humor is so sharp and his pessimism so honest. He doesn't sugarcoat our predicaments, but he doesn't deny the small mercies, a shared joke, a memory, a brief embrace, that keep us going either. In Beckett's worldview, traditional plots and pretenses are lies we tell ourselves to feel important. He systematically dismantled them. In a typical play, characters pursue well-defined objectives like love, success, revenge. But Beckett asks, even if they get those things, does it answer the fundamental questions? Does the hero, having won his lady, really live happily ever after? He implicitly asks. To him, all those resolutions were false endings that dodged the real issue. That underlying anguish of the human condition remains. So Beckett begins where other writers stop, after the illusions have fallen. Godot begins after the plot has failed, their hoped-for meeting never happens, and we never even learn why they expected it. Endgame starts after some unspecified apocalypse. The characters are just passing time in the rubble. Happy Days gives us a woman buried up to her waist and later neck, in sand, yet prattling on optimistically to avoid facing doom. Beckett's genius was making these dire setups strangely compelling and even relatable. By stripping reality to its naked bones, he forces us to confront what's left, ourselves stuck in time trying to find reasons to go on. At first, many found his work depressing or simply incomprehensible. But gradually it became clear that Beckett had articulated the zeitgeist of the mid-20th century. In a world that had witnessed the Holocaust and nuclear bomb, old certainties felt bankrupt. Beckett's characters, lost and confused yet enduring, spoke to that collective trauma and search for meaning. By 1969, he was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature, though characteristically, he shunned the ceremony. His influence spawned countless imitators and a whole theatrical movement. Martin Eslin, who literally coined the term theater of the absurd, placed Beckett at its center and argued that these playwrights were responding to Camus' philosophy of the absurd. The idea that the world has no inherent meaning and that we long for meaning anyway. Even as Beckett's later plays grew ever shorter and more minimalist, one is a 30-second piece of nothing but a recorded breath and a cry. Another has only a pair of lips speaking in darkness. They continue to be performed widely. Audiences, it turns out, have found unexpected comfort or catharsis in Beckett's unyielding mirror. There is a strange solace in seeing our own confusion and perseverance reflected on stage without varnish. Beckett leaves us with a paradoxical challenge. Can we find meaning in accepting meaninglessness? His theater asks, if life is an absurd waiting game, do we laugh or do we cry, or both? Are we, like Vladimir and Estragon, doomed to repeat the same conversations and routines to fill the void, or is there something genuine to be found in our loyalty to each other through the long wait? In short, when the grand narratives crumble, what do we do with the silence that remains? Beckett doesn't answer directly, but through his bleak comedy he hints that perhaps the answer is in how we face that silence. With a shrug, a joke, and an obstinate refusal to give up hope, however faint.